The reading is taken from the Gospel according to St. Luke, chapter 8, verses 40 to 56. It will be found on page 1038 of the Bibles in the church or on the screen in front of you. Now, when Jesus returned from the region of the Gerasenes, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on the way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the hem of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" asked Jesus. When they all denied it, Peter said, "But Master, the people are crowding around you and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, and said, "Your daughter is dead. Don't trouble the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Only believe, and she will be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." They all laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. This is the word of the Lord.
A young police officer was taking his final exam at Hendon Police College in North London when he came to this question. It read, "You are on patrol in London when an explosion occurs in a gas main in a nearby street. On investigation, you find that a large hole has been blown in the footpath and there is an overturned van lying nearby. Inside the van, there's a strong smell of alcohol. Both occupants, a man and a woman, are injured. You recognise the woman as the wife of your chief inspector, who is at present away on a conference in the USA. A passing motorist stops to offer you assistance, and you realise that he is a man who is wanted for a series of violent armed robberies. Just at that moment, a man runs from a nearby house, shouting that his wife is expecting a baby and that the shock of the explosion has made the birth imminent. Another man is crying for help, having been thrown into an adjacent canal by the explosion, and he cannot swim. Bearing in mind the provisions of the Mental Health Act, describe in a few words what actions you would take." The young officer thought for a moment, picked up his pen and wrote these words, "I would take off my uniform and mingle with the crowd." I don't know about you, but there have certainly been times in my life when everything seems to start happening at once and the temptation to just walk away and leave everyone to get on with it has been absolutely overwhelming. And I just wonder if Jesus ever felt like this, because everywhere he went, people would follow him, clamouring for his attention, and our reading today is a case in point. First, a ruler from the local synagogue pushes his way through to Jesus and falls at his feet. His only daughter is dying, and he's just desperate for Jesus to come to his house and to heal her. And if you've ever been in that situation as a parent with a very sick child, you know exactly the desperation that Jairus was going through. He must have been so relieved when Jesus said, I'm coming to your house. And then suddenly this woman interrupts them. She's been sick for 12 years, the same age as Jairus' daughter. So she'd started being ill when Jairus' daughter was just a baby, and for all the lifetime of this little girl, she'd been ill. It just hadn't stopped. And Jewish law was very strong about being unclean and being clean. And they believed that if you had an issue of blood from your body, that you were unclean. So there were all sorts of rules surrounding people who'd got wounds, who were bleeding from wounds, or particularly women with menstruation. Whether the bleeding was normal or whether it was abnormal, you were unclean. And Jewish men would really, in particular, Jewish men would avoid touching, speaking to, or even looking at a woman to protect themselves from being defiled, because if they were defiled, they had to go through all sorts of rituals to make themselves clean again. The other side of the story was that anything the woman touched would have made her unclean and needed special ritual cleansing. So you can imagine, she wasn't welcomed wherever she went. If people knew this about her, they didn't want her to come near them, they didn't want her to touch anything, they didn't want to draw close to her. So it was really brave of her to appear in public at all, let alone attempt to get close to Jesus. So like Jairus, she too is desperate, but unlike him, she doesn't want Jesus to notice her. In fact, the absolute opposite is true. She just wants to sneak up behind him and touch his clothing without being seen, because she believed that this alone would make her well again. Now, this may sound kind of strange to us, but there's a certain glorious logic about this kind of thinking. If you could become unclean by touching something unclean, then surely the reverse is also true. That's what they believed. You could become whole again if you touched somebody or someone who was holy. And as well as that, a tradition had grown up amongst the Jewish people that the tassels on holy men's clothing possessed particular magical powers which could either prevent illness or else cure illness. And I found this in a commentary that was written by a Jewish rabbinical commentator on the New Testament. It was believed that the tassels of a holy man possessed some magical power, particularly of healing. Both the colour blue, as well as the knotting of the fringes, were looked upon by the superstitious as possessing preventative, prophylactic, and healing powers. That was what they believed. And so this woman is desperate to get up to Jesus and touch him. Now, I have no idea if Jesus had tassels on his clothes. Knowing Jesus, I very much doubt if he did. I don't think he'd have been too bothered about the tassels on his clothes. But people wanted to touch him. And Mark's gospel gives us a couple of occasions where this happened. Because of the crowd, Jesus told his disciples to have a small boat ready for him to keep the people from crowding him. For he had healed many, so that those with diseases were pushing forward to touch him. It's this touch thing. And another time, wherever Jesus went, into villages, towns, or countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched him were healed. Now, Luke wants us to understand that it isn't magic that's causing the people to be healed, because probably in the people's minds there was a whole lot of superstition going on around this business of touching somebody holy. But Luke wants us to know it's God's divine power coming from Jesus that's doing it. So he writes this: a large crowd had come to hear Jesus and to be healed of their diseases. The people all tried to touch him because power was coming from him and healing them all. And Luke wasn't getting carried away in his imagination when he said this. At the beginning of Luke's gospel, he actually says, "I want to write a careful account of Jesus' life." And Luke was a doctor, so he had a professional interest wherever matters of sickness or health were concerned. He didn't want to discredit his profession, and he didn't want to discredit Jesus. So if he talks about power coming from Jesus, then actually this was what Luke had observed. He was a doctor. He was used to looking at things and seeing them. So he knew that this had happened. And Jesus confirms what Luke says, because when the woman has touched him, he stops and he says, "Who touched me?" And no one answers. And he elaborates, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me." So Jesus knew that power had gone from him to this sick woman. And the disciples are just surprised by this. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say when you've got crowds of people crushing you, which is what was happening. Everyone was touching Jesus. What a silly thing for Jesus to say. And Jesus persists, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone from me." Now, Jesus knows perfectly well who's touched him, but he wants the woman to come forward so that she can be pronounced completely well and reinstated in public. After years of shame, years of hiding away, she needs to be healed emotionally as well as physically. And as she realizes she can't hide anymore, she comes forward and falls at Jesus' feet. It's now her turn to come forward and fall at Jesus' feet. And in the hearing of the crowd, she tells them how Jesus had touched her and how she was instantly healed. And then it's Jesus' turn to affirm her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." And the word peace in Hebrew means more than just peace. It means wholeness. It means wellness. It means completion. You're whole again. You're put back together mentally and physically. But just as her life is beginning again, a message comes that Jairus' daughter has died. Don't bother the teacher, both because the girl was dead, but also because there was a body in the house. It made the house unclean. Anyone who went in there would be unclean. But Jesus wasn't a normal rabbi. He wasn't afraid of being made unclean, and he certainly wasn't afraid of death. And the faith of the woman has healed her, so Jesus now tells Jairus to have faith. Don't be afraid, just believe, and she will be healed. And Jairus must have been in turmoil. You know, he must have been thinking things like, if Jesus hadn't stopped for that woman, maybe we'd have been in time. Maybe he was angry with the woman. Maybe he was angry with Jesus. Maybe he was angry with the crowd because they were making the journey slow. He would have been grieving for his daughter. He would have had all these thoughts swirling around inside him. But maybe, too, he was encouraged because he'd just witnessed this amazing miracle taking place. So he would have had hope as well. If she could be made well because she touched Jesus, then maybe it's not too late. Maybe Jesus can still do something for my daughter. Well, Jairus was probably in turmoil, but when he arrived at the house was too, because it would have been stuffed full of professional mourners playing musical instruments and weeping and wailing loudly. And of course, they laugh when Jesus says the girl is sleeping, because they have seen hundreds of dead bodies. They know what death looks like. But what they don't realize is that Jesus is the Lord of life with power over death itself. So Jesus just gets everyone out of the way. And he just takes the parents and Peter and James and John into the girl's room. And he invites the girl to sit up. He lifts her up. He invites her to stand. And she does. And she's completely well again. And Luke, the doctor, can't resist sort of putting in a bit of medical information. He says her spirit returned. And we probably don't pick that up from these words, but what he was meaning was her spirit had left her. She really had been dead. And now her spirit had returned and she was restored. Now, both Jairus and the sick woman were desperate for Jesus' touch. They knew they needed Jesus. But the watching crowd needed him too, without realizing it. Because all of them would have had their secret sins and their secret shames. They would have had the things that made them unclean. Some of them might have been physically ill. Some of them might have been emotionally ill. Some of them might have been both physically and emotionally ill. Some of them might simply have had somebody in their family who was sick or who was dying or who was in pain. And they all needed to hear Jesus' message of love, life, and forgiveness. They all needed his wholeness and his peace, just as we do. And it struck me that some of the crowd probably knew that they needed Jesus, but they didn't come forward because maybe they weren't desperate enough for him, or maybe they were just afraid, both to acknowledge their need and maybe afraid of what might happen if Jesus actually did do something about it. Sometimes staying in the hole you're in feels safer than risking letting anyone near you, especially God, because what might he do or say or expect? Just this week, a pigeon got trapped down our dining room chimney, and my husband took the plate off the back of our gas fire, but the bird was too frightened to be caught, and Joe came upstairs, I was working in my study, and he asked me if I had any ideas about what to do. But when I lay on the floor and looked in the chimney, I just couldn't see the bird. "It's just there on the right-hand side," said Joe. But I still couldn't see it. There was a big, fat, grey brick, and then next to that, there was a narrow gap. But peer as I did through the gap, I could not see this bird. And then Joe shone a torch into the gap, and I realised that the big, fat brick had eyes. It was the pigeon. It was enormous. How could I possibly have missed it? And this pigeon had obviously decided that we were the enemy, and the safest thing to do was to sit absolutely still and pretend to be a brick. And as it was covered with dirt from the chimney, it did that absolutely brilliantly. I tell you, this pigeon really looked like a brick. Now, my children were born in the era of terry toweling nappies. I can now add another useful thing to their list of usefulness. They are excellent. If you ever want to catch a pigeon, you need a toweling nappy. So I reached in with this cloth and I wrapped the cloth round the pigeon to cover its eyes so that it would be quiet. And then I lifted it out and I walked out into the garden with this little sort of cloth bundle in my arms. And I just... I know it sounds totally daft. I don't particularly like pigeons. If you live near Norton Bridge, which I do, there used to be hundreds of them on the bridge, and they were such a nuisance, and they sometimes perch just above our bedroom window very early in the morning and wake us up because they're cooing and whatnot, and they're messy, and I don't like them. But I had this little bird... big fat pigeon in my arms. And I just felt so overwhelmed with an instinct to protect it, to carry it out and set it free. And I knew it was scared and I knew it was vulnerable. And I was actually sort of rocking it a bit like a child and singing over it. And I was saying, it's all right, you're going to be okay, we're just carrying out, we're just going to let you go in a minute, it's okay, and I was doing the whole baby rocking thing, you know, as you do. And we took it out, and my husband said, we'll put it in a safe place and see what happens, and it might not fly quickly, so let's put it high up so that the local cats don't get it. We unwrapped this bird, and as soon as it had been unwrapped, it just flew. It just soared off into the sky. And I just thought, oh, isn't that wonderful? We all need God's touch. But some of us may be like that pigeon, you know. We know we need him. We know we need rescuing. But we're kind of sitting in the chimney pretending to be a brick because we're not actually sure whether being rescued is going to be a good thing or not. And if I stay very, very still, they won't know that I'm here. And God is saying, I know you're there and you need me, but you have to let me rescue you. If I had such instinctive love for a kind of bird that I don't even like particularly, and such joy at releasing it to fly, getting it out of a hole and releasing it to fly. How much love does God have for us that he wants to reach into all the sticky, messy situations we're in. He wants to reach into all the pain that we're in. He just wants to say, you're safe. You're safe with me. I'm here. I'm here to rescue you. You know, we all need that. Yeah, we all need that. So I'm going to invite you to stand if you'd like to, if you're comfortable standing. And I'm just going to pray and ask Jesus to come and just meet us where we are and touch us by his Spirit. And some of you may need today a special touch from him. You may be hurting physically or emotionally. You may just be weary. You may be stressed. You may feel that you're in that hole covered in dust and you don't know how to get out and you don't know who can help you. But I'm just going to ask him to come and just minister to us. And we're just going to have a time of silence. I'll just say a prayer at the beginning and then I'm going to hand it over to God. And then at the appropriate time, Simon will finish the service and you'll be free to go and minister with your children. And if you really find this kind of thing very difficult and you think, this isn't for me, I don't know what she's talking about, please just be peaceful, either sitting or standing, be peaceful. And just pray for those around you, because God really wants to meet with people today. He wants to touch you. And some people he wants to set free. He just wants you to be able to fly again. So do please stand. Loving Father, it wasn't the cloak that healed the woman. It was Jesus. It wasn't magic. It was your power that you gave Jesus when you anointed him with the Holy Spirit. So, Lord, we ask you to come afresh to us today. We don't ask you to come because you're absent. We just ask that you make yourself more present to us here. We know that you're already here. But, Lord, please come and make yourself present. Father, you know our needs. You know our hearts. So please touch us where we need you. And some of you may need healing today. And if that's you, just open your hands. God knows who you are. Knows who you are. He knows where you are. And some of you are just weary. Weary, weary, weary. Deep down weary. And you've been trying so hard to do the right thing. God just says, I love you. That's all you need to know. I love you. Just let me hold you. Let me still you with my peace. Thank you. And there are some people here that God wants to do a new thing with. We think we've been flying, but actually we've been kind of stuck at ground level, and he just wants to set us free again to fly and to know his will and to hear his voice and to follow what he's asking us to do. So Lord, I pray blessing on those who want to fly, that they'll lean on your strength, that they'll lean on your understanding. God is so good. We're going to finish with a song. Maybe during that song, or just after it. People, if you feel you need to go and find your children, you can. Kate's holding on to them. Bless you.